Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As usual, from 4 to 6 is your favorite duo here on Eagle FM, keeping you company wherever you find yourself, whether you are in, you know, on your way home, on your way, wherever you're going, no judging, but still, you know, just appreciating the fact that you tuned in. Just that, don't get into trouble in the process. Well, as usual, we usually go for, you know, just a little bit of introduction and then a few, you know, digressions in the middle. But the goal is to have a discussion that basically have one giant question at the center of it. And today's giant question at the center of everything is, can we get along? Not as a black, white, but you know, just people in general. You see, thanks to technological advancement, we have the ability today of traveling faster and longer and more frequent than our ancestors did, as long as we know, looking at the recorded history. Now, all these things are now raising one question, and we have a finite resources, like, you know, Thanos puts it. We have a finite resources and everyone wants this resource. So at the end of the day, there is this competition which sometimes boils into armed conflicts over these resources. The question now that we are going to be looking at today, not from Home Run's perspective, but from the 2026 Global Justice Report perspective, they really do, they asked a very interesting question. And the question is, what is a just society? Because a lot of us just run around, you know, use words sometimes, and I'm as guilty of that as everyone else. At least everyone else that did not go to private school. Actually, when you look at it from a technical, technical use of language itself, a lot of us are guilty of using, or you know, of using a lot of words we can't even define. And you get that a lot, especially in, in social discourse. You will have someone saying, okay, you know what, this is, I know my rights. Now, you see, if I was a police officer, I would just be nice enough to hand you a chair and explain to me just how much do you know about your rights? Police officers just do that and watch someone incriminate themselves. Because as much as we run around saying, I know my rights, a lot of us cannot pinpoint where these rights are coming from in which part of which legislation. Now, that's just the simplest form that I could come up with. The simple question that you can just basically bring up is one of the language that we use. Do we understand the terms? Like I pointed it out earlier, if I was the police officer and I ran into someone who was driving drunk and they told me, you know what, well, you can't do this to me, I know my rights, I would gladly give you a chair. Actually, I would just give you a place to sleep, you should, in a holding cell, obviously. And the next day, I would just give you a chair, I can even buy you a beer. Just sit you down and let you explain to me, what do you know about your rights? And believe me, if police officers started doing that, you are going to end up with a large number of people that will incriminate themselves more than those that will actually know what their rights are. And that's both funny and scary. Because, if you just take a phrase and repeat it, If you just take a phrase and repeat it multiple times, especially if you put it on social media, wherever it is that you throw it, where it can be reached, you know, reached or accessed easily by the public, then you just find that a lot of people are singing a phrase they don't know what it means. And you don't have to know what everything means. Unless you're Ned, then sure, go nuts. It's actually fun. Now, the question that was asked here, the question that was asked here is one of, what is a just society? Because a lot of us say, you know, justice, we live in a democratic country, you know, democracy versus communism and socialism and this. But, you know, a lot of the, you know, a lot of us, you know, in my opinion, we are looking at this from a, and this is the thing about too much education. We are looking at this from a, from an academic standpoint. We are not looking at it from how it plays out in the general public, in its societal application. Because, you can have something that is a state of, I mean, that looks impeccable on paper. It looks like, I mean, every comma and full stop and capital letter is in all the right places. Now, implement it in real life and watch people look at you and go like, what were you thinking when you wrote this? Now, so the question, now, some of the questions that we're basically going to look at and some of the answers provided in this report, and the report is coming from Global Justice, you know, it's a Global Justice report coming from a Global Justice Project. That's a global institution that's basically dedicated to talking about justice. And if you ask me, this is, okay. Earlier this year, the Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, gave a speech which I still believe to this day is the speech of the year. Now, that speech of the year, if you ask me, when I compare them with what's in this report, they are going on a head-on collision. And the comparison that you're going to find out, that you have concluded if you have gone through the report, or that you are going to conclude by the end of this show, is that the report is too theoretical, and it's mostly based in an ideal world. They do touch a lot of parts of, you know what, this and this and this and this is what we have to sort out. But it's a structural, you know, it's the current global and economic structural issue that we are dealing with. And for those of you that were listening to Mind the Gap on Sunday, then, I went through some of these. In the 1800s, the British citizens were blaming the Irish for the reasons why they didn't have jobs. The Irish took away our jobs. The Irish took over, you know, is the reason why we don't have all this, all the necessary service provision that the government, that is intended to us by our country. In the 1800s, it was the Irish. Fast forward to the late 1800s, early 1900s, it was the Jews. Now, fast forward to the 1960s and 70s, it was the Caribbeans, who they invited, by the way, to rebuild after World War II. And fast forward to the 2000s, and to the 2000s, it was a Muslim. Now it's just a Muslim. And by the way, in 2016, it was the Polish. Everything that a lot of the British, especially the UK, people in the UK, citizens, everything they are saying about Muslim and non-UK citizens today, in 2016, they said about Polish. The Polish are lazy. The Polish are taking over our jobs. Well, they are not even from the UK. Last time I checked, they're both white. Now, I like to point that out because a lot of us tend to believe that much of the divisions that we have in society are based on skin color and all that. No. And you can go back to, to my Mind the Gap show. I covered that I don't want to say larger or longer or academic. No. Just sarcasm and music, but I did cover it using some historical reference. So, now let's just look at it this way. Let's just look at the report first, and then we'll come back to why I'm saying this whole thing is in a head-on collision with Mark Carney's speech. To this day, I still maintain Mark Carney's speech of January at the World Economic Forum is a reality. I mean, it took him 80 years because his country was benefiting, and he did admit that his country, Canada, was benefiting from the impartial application of international law and the international norms. Not partial. How do I put it? Yeah, actually, that's the correct term. The partial application, it wasn't impartial. And he pointed that out in his speech, so much respect. So now, on the other side of the break, let's dive a little bit into this report, then we'll come back to the speech.
ShopRite's biggest toy promotion is all set to blast off. Get ready to play more and pay less with our wide range of toys. Get unbeatable deals like Zeus Quad Bike Ride On for just 379 Namibian dollars 99 and a 55 centimeter Winter Princess doll, all variants for only 129 Namibian dollars 99 each. Hurry and save big now until 21 June 2026. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust always.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. So let's look at what this report says about, or more like how they try to answer what justice is. What is a just world? And by the way, that's just one of the questions they asked. One of the questions they asked, basically the same question was repeated several times, just using different wordings. So what is a just world? So thanks to the international institutions or international, one giant ecumenical hug that we would like to have, that we call the international community, which is an interesting term, actually, if you look at it, you know, the whole international community thing. I mean, the term international community itself. So it's a coming together. It's a community of, global community. International, and the English also, it's awesome there. In between nations, international. That's a nice one. Now, anyway, what they just dive in here at a global justice project. Let me just run through a few of the questions that they pointed out. What is a just society? Well, that's a nice question. What is a just world? What is a just planet? Well, I could just answer that question with definitely not this planet, and that'll be the end of the show. Because we all know that this is not describing this planet, but sure, but you know, those questions are very important. Now, in this report, we attempt to describe how a world committed to global socio-economic justice and planetary habitability, basically living together on one planet, planetary habitability could look by 2100. Well, I mean, we are picking a year that none of us is going to see. That's a brilliant idea. That's, I mean, a good place to start. But especially especially in relation to distribution of economic and environmental resources within and between countries, including access to education, health, material goods, income, wealth, wealth and political voice. So, the whole report is based on looking at justice beyond human rights. And this is not just for one particular country, but for the whole world by the year 2100. There is not going to be any justice if we don't start talking about it right now and lay the foundation right now. I have a lot of short answers. Well, remember the Panama Papers, right? The Panama Papers, back in 2016, is when I lost hope. Now, if you are new to the world of politics, the Panama Papers are based on, call it an expose. They say one journalist, a very wonderful lady whose name, who by the way was assassinated in a bomb, in a car bomb explosion in 2017. In Malta, an island nation just at the south, southeast of Spain, southeast of, basically southern Italy, and a little to the southeast of Italy. Now, she was a journalist, and she was a very brave one, and one thing that she did was she was very good at publishing all the questionable activities that public officials were doing, especially, and she did much of that in her own, in her own jurisdiction, basically in her own island nation. She did a lot of that. Now, here's the thing. And one of the people that she exposed before the whole panel paper thing basically went wild, one of the people that she exposed was the prime minister and a very, very powerful businessman in the, on the island of Malta. Now, at this very same time, in South America, in Panama, Panama as in where you find the, your Panama Canal. At the very same time in Panama, there is a law firm that was started by a German national and a bunch of other guys, as you can imagine. Now, that law firm, okay, un momento. We'll get to the law firm in a few.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, at that very same time, something was brewing in South America. There was a law firm that was started, and it was there was a law firm that was being operated out of Panama, and that law firm did not do what your ordinary law firm do. Like actually, they did exactly what law firms do, most law firms do, which is consulting works, but they took it a little further than that. As in, they started. I mean, this is a law firm. Basically, it's operated by a bunch of people that are privy to what the law says, but they were busy. Instead of enforcing it, they were basically helping politicians and business individuals the world over to find loopholes, loopholes to hide their money wherever they could find. Now, by the time of the whole bust back in 2016, these guys were said to have at least registered about 200,000 shell companies that were used by celebrities, nations leaders, prominent world individuals all around the world. Now, let's go back to that. Let's go back to that question again, shall we? While we welcome Dwight.
What does it sound like? An iPhone with two SIM cards story.
iPhone with two SIM cards,
2.0. And yeah. Please don't tell anyone. We don't want to be on front pages.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The guy who was calling us WhatsApp qualified lawyer still has a picture of him doing this. Don't play with that.
What does that picture mean?
That's when they were saying, you know what?
It's not the skull and crossbones of Orlando Pirates.
No, it's just saying, well, we don't want to be here because, you know, just lower your voice.
Yeah.
I love
all the puns that exist in the world, ne?
Yeah, the internet never forgets.
Well, it's also Namibian communication space also doesn't forget.
Oh, no, we don't.
Yeah.
And look, it's funny. Funny as heck. Now, I was just looking at what this report, the questions, at least they explain, they are trying to answer. Now, the question at the top of the list, if you look at the report, is what is a just society?
Mm.
Yeah, and what is a just world? What is a just planet? In this report, we attempt to describe how the world committed to global socio-economic justice and planetary habitability could look by 2100, in particular, the distribution of economic and environmental resources within and between countries,
yeah,
including access to education, health, material goods, income, wealth, and political voices. We also lay out a plausible and fully quantified transition path to get there from 2026 to 2100. That is one massive undertaking.
Well, Hamoud, I also had to look at who are the authors behind the...
That is one massive undertaking.
Behind the report. One of them is a renowned... He's actually known as the pioneer of inequality, but from a Northern Hemisphere perspective. Remember, I hope you realize that when you read the report,
yeah,
technically Africa has like a voice.
That is why I'm looking at all these, all these things that we are going to share as a global community, right? One of those things that we are going to share. This is naive beyond measure.
Because all I see is there,
yeah,
extraction still taking place in Africa. Africa working for the world. So there is someone. The relationship is someone,
uh-huh,
is dependent upon Africa or on South America. Or on Southeast Asia.
Let me take you through the list of what we are going to know how to share by 2100.
Okay.
Yeah.
As if we've already seen in the crystal ball, what is there?
First of all, picking the year that none of us is going to reach was a brilliant idea.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's like the same thing the African Union did, the exact same thing. 2063, right? By the time we get there, you won't have anyone to blame. Because we'll all be sitting with Father Abraham at the time. Now, the distribution of environmental resources within and between countries, including access to education, health, material, income, wealth, and political voice. Okay, let's just talk about, how we are going to share, education, health, and, material goods, and income, and wealth. Just those two, income and wealth. The gap between those who can afford polony and those who cannot afford bread keeps getting wider and wider. Now,
you do realize you need the polony, you need the bread to put the polony on it, ne?
That's if you can afford the polony. That's my science teacher's That's my son's teacher's.
It sounds like a teacher's example.
Oh, yeah. Just, you know, he really liked, I think he just, I mean, he just really liked Polony.
Yeah.
Now, income and wealth. Didn't the whole world go nuts after Elon Musk became the first trillionaire?
Did he become it already, or is it still expected in this year?
Is still expected, or is becoming it? I have no idea. The thing is, we already have billionaires.
Mm.
Yeah, already have billionaires. And one thing these guys are known for is tax evasion and employee exploitation.
Definitely.
Now, that's, if you ask me, that's the reality on the ground. Now, how we are going to solve that? Yeah. Oh, on the other side of the break, we'll continue. No. The report says more than just that.
ShopRite's biggest toy promotion is all set to blast off. Get ready to play more and pay less with our wide range of toys. Get unbeatable deals like 24-centimeter Cuddly Baby Bukeka or Britney Doll for just $59.99 each. And a 36-centimeter Zeus dump truck, red or yellow, for only $129.99 each. Hurry and save big. Now until 21 June 2026. ShopRite. Lower prices you can trust. Always.
Welcome back. So, the world full of equality is a very nice one. Would like to achieve that world. But the question now that we are going to, that basically this whole report is based on is, how are we going to get there?
Well, let's start from a discussion, Hamoud, of, and I'm slightly deviating from another case study, which in a way tries to meet a societal issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it technically is based on a discussion from, you know, who's driving the discussion. So, yes. Obviously, this Global Justice Report, which is compiled by the Global Justice Project people, one of them includes Gabriel Zucman, a renowned economist who focuses just on inequality. But it's the inequality that he is exposed to.
That's the Northern Hemisphere.
Northern Hemisphere, yeah. In developed countries, in North America and in other parts of the world. But we obviously, in a Namibian context, we have to understand, okay, so how does this redistribution of resources between everybody materialize in a practical context? So the case study I'm quickly deviating to.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm going to highlight to you, Helmut, is the alignment of an industry under a specific ministry discussion, a dimension of such a nature.
Yeah.
Because, you remember, we've heard discussions before about who then has to carry the banner specifically of trying to sort out inequality. Currently, right now, it's now supposed to be the job of Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy, but the AE for the past 35 years, before year 36 this year, no, past 34 years, have only known how to be a silent regulator besides the, you know, while the mining industry operates and the energy industry does its thing.
Yeah.
Now they've got to understand how to develop industries. But you and I, we've already shown industries can be in any sector. And in any, and it can be any industry, so it can be textile.
Yeah.
But Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy has only known mines and energy for 34 years of its existence. The only thing they've been responsible for has been the Mineral Act and the Energy Act and the Petroleum Act and the other one. What's the other act's name? The one that also governs Namcor, that other one. I think it's the Energy Act, that one. So, no, that's the Petroleum Act, I think. So they've only known legislation in their purview. So yesterday, when I went to the responsible gambling, I'm showing you a scenario, ne?
Mm-hmm.
Just see the scenario.
Responsible in gambling.
I went to the responsible gambling conference, which was organized by, and we'll obviously just not to, what do they call that thing in entertainment? Not to, you know, to spoil alert people. for a conversation we're going to have in future.
Mm-hmm.
So the conference was organized by an NGO or a civil society organization.
Yeah.
So this CSO brought together the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism and the Ministry of Health and gambling operators in Namibia, and they invited a South African organization. Now, the South African guys, they come, they do their presentation. The South African guys, how the presenter explains it, is literally they say, we are a public benefit organization. They're a CSO empowered by by an act. The act gives them these powers to do something on the part of public benefit, a public good. And I sat with that label going like, wow, basic English to the point of understanding a mission and a vision.
Mm-hmm.
When you come to Namibia, so we later on in that conference, we started stumbling into legislation because I started asking hard questions. I asked the lady from the one moderation session, I'm sorry for all the tough questions, but it's just for my understanding because we have to look at technicality. So I asked her, one of the questions I asked was, this discussion that you guys are having here, will this lead to law changes? And how will it impact the lotteries discussion as well? Because lotteries also fall under Ministry of Environment's purview.
Yeah.
And then I asked the next question, is the gambling board present? Firstly, on the presence of the gambling board, the guy from the Ministry of Environment that was there said, no, they're not here. So the entity that has powers from an act is not present at a discussion that impacts customers interacting with an activity that they have to regulate. But I'm jumping the gun once again and spoiler alerting our show, a topic we will have for show.
So the event was a gossip, but go on.
So one of the questions I asked was, I asked these South Africans, they are empowered by an act to mitigate gambling addiction and to assist and to step in when necessary. Because what it sounded like in that conference hall was, for the Namibians, it's a new thing. But I almost made a statement. Because in some cases, you can see people are not sharing the information you want them to share, Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
Then one of the questions I asked, okay, the South Africans, what's the guy that presented, Bevan McBride, I asked him, Bevan, you guys have powers from an act. He said, yes. Then I asked the Namibians, so will you guys change the Gaming and Entertainment Act to give the gambling board powers to do the same thing that the South Africans are doing?
In terms of addiction mitigation?
Addiction mitigation in terms of communication, meaning an extensive marketing campaign.
Yeah.
Because one thing that Namibians are averse of is paying money for marketing in Namibia.
Yeah, I've seen that.
So, and because Bevan McBride's presentation highlighted that they actively... one of the requirements in terms of compliance for a casino, a gambling operator, is they must have in their advertising a small line that says, winners know when to stop. That small line is their line, their tagline from South Africa. Winners know when to stop. That's all, Helmut.
Okay.
So now, here's the crux, the coup de grace of the crux. The coup de grace. During lunch, I sit down coincidentally with the two South Africans, with Alpheus Matlala, no relation to the Matlala situation.
Lambo.
No relation. And with Bevan McBride. So then I asked him, listen, Bevan, under which ministry do you guys and the gambling industry of South Africa fall under? He said, this whole initiative falls under the Department of Commerce, a ministry guided just on economic activity, pure commercial and trade activity.
Mm.
So guess under which ministry is gambling?
Where?
Environment, forestry, and tourism.
Yeah.
Environment, forestry, and tourism.
Helmut? Because tourists like casinos and
says who?
Tourists like hotels, and they decided to throw everything just right in there.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Any Namibian will tell you, all the Namibians they've seen in a gambling house, a shabin with a slot machine, or in a casino in Namibia, is that it's Namibians sitting there.
Yeah.
So where does the fallacy come from, meaning the misalignment, that gambling is for tourists only?
I think, I'm just referencing, it's because if you look at the hospitality industry in terms of its physical infrastructure setup, from the Western perspective, where we basically got
they incorporate the two, gambling element.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like a built-in thing.
But does that not describe to you that there's also a misalignment of understanding the ecosystem? The second scenario.
Yeah, is it that I think that's why a copy, edit, and paste is a good thing. we more often skip the editing part. We just copy and paste.
Yeah. Do you know why I asked Bevan that question?
Yeah.
I asked Bevan. So Bevan, in terms of understanding gambling. Because when you look at a misaligned agenda or a misaligned goal or a misaligned mission statement, it is usually a statement that doesn't take into account the reality on the ground.
Yeah.
The reality on the ground is technically you can see Minister of Environment's people they only regulate licensing, Helmut. It's licensing they regulate.
That's it.
The event that I went to at the start of the year for lotteries was also primarily based upon licensing. In that discussion of lotteries even, because the lotteries board people were there, but the gambling board's people were not there. Can you believe it? So in that discussion even, the lotteries people had to explain as well how they fit into a gambling addiction element. Because it does happen in South Africa. There were people impulsively buying lottery tickets with the state lottery in South Africa. They bought. My sister told me these stories of people in South Africa that she met and knew of who would purposefully try to win the 50 million next week. By next week, it probably would have grown to 70 million. And then they instantaneously go and pay $100, $200 on lotteries. Research has been done on lotteries specifically that it also has the same gambling element. Addictive element.
Yeah.
You know, that
it's all dopamine driven.
Yeah. That person who probably needed that 20 Namibian dollars to buy a loaf of bread for tonight.
Yeah.
Converted that 20, redirected that $20 into a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
Not knowing what the probability might be. The probability is potentially you versus 3 million other Namibians.
Yeah.
So in that scenario, when you look at the scale of probability, of who can participate and who can win and who potentially will not win.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it just takes one ticket.
Yeah.
But you don't know if you've got the ticket. So does the other person not know if they've got the right ticket. Nobody knows who's got the right ticket until the day that the draw takes place.
Yeah.
So, highlighting this particular dimension about misalignment. Now, I wanted to bring in misalignment, Helmut. Sorry for quickly sidelining a situation because global justice, or when we've explored social justice in a Namibian context before,
yeah.
I mean, we've interviewed Lloyd. Remember Lloyd? Lloyd Bock? We've interviewed Lloyd. We've even looked at last year's, the social justice conference that was held in the Middle East somewhere. Can't remember if it was the UAE or something. And even in that particular dimension, it mostly boils down to interventions to improving everyday lives. We've looked at the smart city discussion last week. This week, at the start of this week. The smart city discussion is based upon improving lives. You use resources to improve lives.
I think, you basically summarized this whole report. The question is, how do we use the available resources, which is found basically the world over, and then distribute it equally so that we all have, the equal access to education, health, because, you and I have been through this like 1,000 times.
Yeah.
That, if you can just look at it here at home, our food insecurity discussion is not an insecurity that is caused by lack of food.
Yeah.
It's caused by the, you know, by the means to access the available food because it's there. So,
but you need that $5 to get
exactly.
There. Yeah.
You know, you need that you need the $15 to buy bread.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be shoplifting. I know, which is a misnomer because you're just lifting one bread and then all of a sudden you're lifting the whole shop. I love technicalities.
Yeah. But
that's the biggest lie ever.
But do you think in terms of prosecuting someone under an offense, do you think bread lifting sounds, you know, more enticing than shoplifting?
The judge is going to kick you out of his courtroom. Commercial.
Join us for the Ehangano Concert Volume 2 with Ali Tobias. Experience an unforgettable evening featuring songs from her latest album, A Bilo, performed live with a full band. Special guest appearances by Tate Buti, DA, Paige, and One Accord. All proceeds from the event will go towards supporting the Our Lady Orphanage. The event takes place on 4 July 2026 at the National Theatre of Namibia. Tickets are available on Web Tickets Namibia for 450 Namibian dollars. Don't miss this powerful night of music, inspiration, and giving back. Ehangano Concert Volume 2. See you there.
Wait is over. The deals are here. It's Big Red Weekend for 3 days only. ShopRite brings you massive savings of up to 50% off. Like a 4kg Real Good IQF chicken mixed portions. Only 200 Namibian dollars. 10kg Top Score Super Maize meal. Just 125 Namibian dollars. 500 grams Rama Original 70% fat spread. Only 25 Namibian dollars each. 450 grams Wheat Bix cereal. Buy two for just 50 Namibian dollars. Don't miss out. This weekend only, get up to 50% off. Valid until 21 June 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back, and you are still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, we are here until the hour of 6, and today's discussion is based on global equality, global resource distribution, and governance distribution, if you factor in the political fairness globally, which is, considering which how many countries are bombing the heck out of each other. And
yeah, and also who's starting
and
the bombing.
You're considering what the entire subject we had yesterday points to the fact of just how difficult it is to get politicians to get along, because there's a lot of espionage going on in this environment and the corporate world. It wasn't until you pointed it out to me, that's when I just looked into it and realized just how bad corporate espionage is. Mm. If you think there's espionage in politics, no, that's nowhere near.
It also happens here in Namibia.
The corporate world is crazy.
No, but now in the corporate world, they actually know each other.
And you see, that's the thing. Basically, you know, it's not espionage anymore. It's just backstabbing.
It's not even backstabbing. There's no loyalty, Helmut. Let me explain to you a scenario. There was a guy I had to work with. He represented the client. I had to work through him.
Mm-hmm.
Helmut, I'm still busy negotiating things with a guy here, nah, at this one company. Then homeboy, next week, I hear Friday, nah, he doesn't work here anymore. He had in between, because he was there for literally 6 months.
Yeah.
Then he had gone back to the previous employer that he was at.
Is that the company I was negotiating with?
No. Which was another company I had continuous commercial activity and interactions with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, suddenly, he's there with him.
Eee.
with the people, the marketing department over there. But now the downside is also, he knows, okay, Dwight is working also here with my, at my new old job.
Yeah.
And then I discovered from another guy, no, from another lady who knows him as well, that he keeps jumping between these two companies.
They allow him to do that?
Yeah. I will not mention names. That's nice. Will not give an indication to the identities.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. I mean,
we can't. There is no backstabbing.
We can't afford, but to defend us in a libel lawsuit.
It's literally like the South African politics landscape.
Yeah.
Everyone who moves away from EFF goes and opens up a political party. Or they move away from the ANC, opening up another political party. It's not backstabbing. It's not betrayal. It's just people realizing, oh, I can also do this.
So it's now the new status quo.
Yeah. But the status quo is based upon bare bones greed. Because if you look at, if you've ever listened to any particular political messaging from Mkhonto we Sizwe when they came into being in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
they don't really have an identity. They're based upon a Zulu identity. They're based upon racism. The party.
Yeah.
Literally one of the things of the party is that you must be from this tribe. Nothing more, nothing less. Even though they've got other...
Okay,
they've
how
got,
does that work though? Like, okay, is it that because they're the majority population in South Africa?
In South Africa KZN. And also in KZN. But the dimension of something like that technically means that that political party technically is right wing. Now, Africans don't want to hear that they are being called right wing. But when you look at a scenario like that, usually in many scenarios around the world, the most right wing people are usually either socialist or communist or what's the other one? They come from the army sometimes. They just do the opposite of everything that you were, that they told you one side and then they do the other thing. So the Global Justice Report obviously tries to find a common balance by saying, as humanity, we need to achieve certain particular goals.
Yeah.
Now, where have we seen such messaging in Namibia, for example? We've seen it with the Universal Basic Income Grant Coalition. The Basic Income Grant Coalition, sorry. They've been messaging that kind of saying that kind of messaging by saying, hey, listen, let's try and bring everybody onto a specific level. Let's try and achieve certain particular goals by distributing cash directly to people. Which is a cash stimulant into the Namibian economy. The downside is what I've tried to understand from Namibia's cabinet, Namibia's executive, is that for some reason, I think Namibia's executive realizes they can't just go and borrow money. They know they cannot just borrow money. Remember what I explained to you, that there's only literally four countries in this world that can print money.
Yeah.
Everybody else has to borrow from the same economies. So, Namibia's executive, technically meaning Namibia's ruling party, knows if they borrow money to do something, it seems like it's a black hole that they're putting money into.
Yeah.
The downside is also you then also see that there's an element of hesitancy in terms of trying to meet a growing demand and a growing need. No one so far in Namibia is probably, not even the Bank of Namibia, and definitely the NSA probably will only a little bit later assess this, but they haven't really looked at the true impact of the Strait of Hormuz, the block plus block equals unblock strategy,
mm-hmm.
which now surprisingly has been called the Start Your Engines Up strategy. After the supposed MOU, isn't that
still waiting to be finalized tomorrow, Switzerland?
Yeah, still, because we have to wait most technically until tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, Bank of Namibia and NSA still have to go and measure what impact it has had on the CPI of Namibians, for Namibians.
Yeah.
We already know about the impact it has had on the petrol price. We've already seen specifically that also that the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy is technically powerless in such particular scenarios when the neighborhood that produces the world's most petroleum products,
the entire AU is powerless.
Is powerless against whatever happens in that little, is it 2 kilometers?
No, it's about 30 something kilometers wide.
Yeah, 30 something kilometers wide. That's straight. That's the width of the thing, because there's an island was in the middle of it, Karg Island.
Yeah.
So there's nothing. That we are literally powerless. Now I've heard that there's apparently new rhetoric or narratives here in Namibia about reaching a first production, petroleum production by 2027, next year. Well, Helmut, let's put that as a bookmarker for you and me, ne? Let's literally see if we have to eat our words from what we've been preaching from the Deloitte report. It's not technically not our words.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No.
But we've been highlighting, listen, one else has this knowledge to say that they can produce before 2030.
Apart from that baseline survey that was done and they put the projection somewhere in 2034, is there any piece of literature that
contradicts that? I've also not seen it. Yeah. Now, I met a journalist last week or the week before who literally said that apparently one of the proponents in the oil exploration there in the ocean, there far off, that apparently they are withholding, actually pumping. And then I stood there looking at the lady. I was like, are you sure? Because that's not what the baseline survey says. And one of the corporation names she mentioned is literally one of the companies that sponsored the baseline survey of, which is something co-authored by, which is what literally Deloitte Namibia did, but it is endorsed by the same Ministry of Mines and Energy, the former name. So anything else that's not in that survey is just noise.
I think the flexibility in the language can be looked at from a perspective of
satisfying investors.
There is that component, but you are looking at it from the projections made in the baseline survey, especially the summary report. I believe that's somewhere on page 8. Generally what the steps that must be taken and the time period it takes per step before from exploration to decommissioning of an oil facility. Once oil is discovered, from all the seismic surveys to the to the testing and drilling and production. Now you have to now to go into detail and look at how long would it take how long would an onshore oil take and how long would an offshore oil take and how long would an oil that is that's being extracted and processed in terms of refining in that particular country, because then you will have to build a refinery. I don't think that plan is made clear in terms of building a refinery as an extension of the ongoing oil exploration. So that means if you take out all the exploration, all the refinery infrastructure setup, I totally understand why the time frame can be reduced if you take out all the, the building of a refinery. Because the explanation itself from the way that it's mapped out from the survey to the decommissioning, it's not really specific as to that time frame, and that process is in reference to onshore or offshore oil.
Yeah.
And seeing that ours is offshore, and because it's offshore, you now have to use an oil rig, and these are floating platforms that you can either build or you can just get one like we did to the Portuguese. And now that extraction, you can just all you have to do if you set that whole thing up, and you don't have to worry about building a refinery at the at the shore of Namibia to refine the oil here and ship everything and ship refined products. Then if you are going to refine it somewhere, all you just need is bring up an oil tanker, and then the extraction starts.
Yeah, the extraction starts, or. You look at the scenario specifically of also, whether or not the actual noise actually translates to any, immediate developments. But before that, we've got an ad break creeping up on us.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back, just a minute, into the hour of five, and we're still going on. So, you were saying?
So, when we obviously look at this particular scenario of what should be achieved. Now, remember this, Hamoud, this report is authored by a whole bunch of economists.
It sounds to me like trickle-down economy.
It does.
It's perfect on paper, but the practical reality is, eish.
Because basically, like, for example, in the summary, there's a sentence here that they go like, the conclusion is simple. It is possible to reconcile planetary habitability and high well-being for all, but only if the transformation rests on three pillars, which are fast decarbonization of energy systems is necessary. I don't understand what that has to do in a Namibian context, because here's the thing, Helmut. I use liquefied gas or natural gas for my stove for cooking. Yeah. So why must that be decarbonized for me? If it's a resource we have, we're 3 million people, our carbon footprint supposedly is still at 0.0 something, 000 something. Why should we decarbonize? Another dimension, we also need to shift towards sufficiency. So sufficiency means to have enough for everybody, which is understood as a sharp reduction in labor hours. Okay. People working less and material footprint and large changes in consumption patterns, food habits, land use and forest cover. That technically spells out the circular economy in one scenario as well. And then finally, it is the drastic reduction in inequality of income, wealth, and power. But if you now tell Namibians to work less, those employers are going to tell you, okay, so you still want the same amount of, still earn the same for the time you are working now.
Obviously, that will, generally, that will impact production.
It definitely will, because now it means, okay, so are you going to adopt AI fully so that AI does some various administrative or production oriented functions? Or is this in collaboration with AI? Or is this just protecting human jobs to ensure that they still earn the salaries?
Even if you adopted AI fully, that will translate into someone paying for the maintenance of whatever it is that's being adopted in substitution of the human labor.
Yeah.
Who is going to pay for it?
Us, the humans.
There you go. Where's the money going to come from?
From us, the humans.
You have got to work. See, well, that didn't shorten much of your work now.
We have to spend money to to make it work. We have to spend money to make it work. There's nothing we can do.
look.
So everywhere I just see humans. The answer is just us, humans. You can't dodge it anywhere.
No.
But then they also note, and the emphasis still stays on the redistribution element across the world. Now, Helmut, I'll be honest and disclose to you, where I heard about this report was from literally one of the episodes or one of the videos that I watched of Professor Richard Murphy. Murphy explained, he basically gave his counter argument to this report because he said, when you look at reality on the ground, this report assumes certain things.
No, this exactly. That's the point I had with this report from day one. It assumes, first of all, that all countries are developed, and we are not.
And now, it assumes that we all have the same currency as well.
Like, there's a lot of assumptions. The first, the whole of a country, or, you know, the part of all countries being developed. I'm pointing that out because if you talk about, a reduction in working time for employees, that can easily be pulled off by a lot of developed countries because they don't have a lot of economic issues to sort out in terms of their industrialization.
Yeah.
We don't have that luxury. So that means on that part, we'll have to, we will have to have a whole different discussion. And even if you bring in the whole robotics implementation and AI discussion, we don't participate in that technology. Hence, we are still working towards our industrialization. Mm. So even if you bring in technology, we are nowhere near the level of trying
of
to use technology, of rolling it out on a on a large scale, in order to give employees time to reduce their working hours.
Yeah.
It's just, and even if you passed, the African Union passed a law to basically make it mandatory for every employer to do that, they themselves in the public sector would not be able to pull that off because the technology, we don't make it. And much of it is ring-fenced by a lot of intellectual properties. And to acquire it will require more. And we don't have that money, hence the donated headquarter in Addis Ababa. Now,
and the same country that supposedly is also in charge to be the headquarters wants to have civil wars and border wars with its neighbors. My goodness.
Richard Murphy, go on.
Yeah. So Murphy highlights that assuming certain situations is problematic. Now, what does he also say? Because now I'm extrapolating his particular statement and superimposing it in a Namibian context. Is because, for once, Hamoud, there's a figure here of the 5,000 euros per capita indicator. Now, Namibia has a total value of its GDP. I just want to be sure, has it gone up or has it gone down? It was at one stage 14 billion US dollars last year. But GDP per capita is literally, you take that quantity of money and you divide it by the amount of Namibians in the country. And if you ask any Namibian, do they see or earn that money in their country per month? Per year.
And that's the.
And flow. Then everyone will say no. Many Namibians will say, no, I don't earn that money. Many Namibians will say no. So, first off, trying to rebalance a picture where you know clearly many people are working class. Namut, you and I, we are working class. I loved a particular conversation between a journalist that was interviewing a former, he's now a retired labor unionist in the UK. What's the guy's name? Mick Lynch. So Mick was in a conversation with the lady from Times Radio in London. Now, you do know this in political science. One of the captured classes of the political class is the media.
Yeah.
We are sometimes the mouthpieces for politicians.
Yeah.
We are also sometimes the mouthpieces for who's the other people?
Multinationals, for the most part.
Multinationals. Academics is the other one that also, because there's a price tag put on academics. Your child gets exposure to better tutors, better teachers, better information, better systems to train on if you've got the right amount of money to send your child to the right school.
Yeah.
Ne? So
that if
you have the money.
Uh-huh.
So Mick, the way he humbles this journalist, this lady. So she speaks, she keeps using the label working class. And then he turns around and he asks her in her own interview, so are you not working class? She says,
But you are.
And then she asked him, do you wake up every morning to come to the office to do something for your salary? Yes. And she said, yes. And she said, and then he told her, you are working class. So why are you?
That's self-explanatory.
It is. So then she told him, why are you as a journalist, who is working class, trying to make the working class, the other working classes, look bad? Now, that's just one of the basics that technically comes through from colonialism, which we Namibians also know, is that usually what the British developed, and which they developed actually from the Romans, was divide and conquer.
Yeah.
So you divide peoples in order to pick them off individually.
Basically turn them against each other, so they don't focus on you.
Yeah, so that you don't look like... So, now... In the Northern Hemisphere, what many of the neutral economists like Richard Murphy have highlighted is that literally in the UK or in the US, the billionaires would literally pay media and buy media outlets to spin another narrative about the economy, to spin a narrative, because currently what's happening in the UK and in Europe and in North America is there is now this growing movement of they are now pushing, that's now the ordinary person is pushing for a wealth tax on billionaires.
Yeah.
Now, this is where this report technically comes from, because of the existence of billionaires. Now, that particular narrative is what Murphy is showing. There's a few flaws in this particular discussion, because this means technically certain things would be met, or there's an assumption that certain things exist. Another particular scenario also, why it'll be difficult in a Namibian context, because Namibia cannot print its own money. But the Bank of England can print UK money. The Bank of England technically is like a money laundering facility. All they do in Helmut is, if the UK government comes and says, hey, we need more money, then the Bank of England says, my guy, don't worry, I've got a printer.
Isn't that what the Federal Reserve does?
The Federal Reserve also does it. The Bank of Japan also does it, and the EU Central Bank in Brussels. So, no, the EU Central Bank doesn't sit in Brussels. No, it does sit in Brussels. So there's literally only four banks, central banks on this planet, dear listeners, if you did not know, that can just press print. They don't even need to know what the reason is. They can say, don't worry, my guy, I've got money.
Wait, isn't that what makes inflation worse?
No. Inflation comes from private sector, Albert. Inflation is when a private company sees, oh, we made targets this year.
Mm-hmm.
We reached our targets. So there are bonuses. Okay, so next year, we need another 10% on those targets. That's inflation. But inflation is also multidimensional. It is also influenced by other factors. Meaning, if block plus block equals unblock strategy takes place in the Middle East that impacts the whole Africa, you can expect inflation. If what's the other one? If there's a financial crisis somewhere in Europe or in North America, you are definitely going to see some sort of a financial an inflationary indicator taking place, because now your Namibian banks had investments in those jurisdictions that now are just disappearing. Now, please explain to me, Hamid, how does money just disappear on the other side of the world? Remember the Iceland discussion that you spoke about, which was that they borrowed money, they opened up their banking sector, they borrowed money.
They basically privatized them.
Yeah.
So they can borrow billions and billions and billions.
But what was also part of that opening up scenario was that the Icelandic pension was also then sort of like invested into the UK financial markets.
Oh, boy.
Which also further exposed them. Now, I'll ask you again. How does money just disappear? Someone has to pay it back. But anyway, let's not digress in that scenario. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking for inflation, always look for the reason where every company will say, but our suppliers also increased. That is where inflation comes from. Inflation is not block plus block equals unblock. Inflation comes from the private sector. The private sector does their thing.
Then so it's a regulation issue.
Then they tell, when they sell services to the public sector, they inform them.
ShopRite's biggest toy promotion is all set to blast off. Get ready to play more and pay less with our wide range of toys. Get unbeatable deals like Zeus Quad Bike Ride On for just 379 Namibian dollars 99 and a 55 centimeter Winter Princess doll, all variants for only 129 Namibian dollars 99 each. Hurry and save big. Now until 21 June 2026. ShopRite. Lower prices you can trust. Always.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with your favorite duo, Helmut and Dwight, here on Eagle FM. So, the universal distribution of resources. I'm with Richard Murphy on this one.
Yeah.
It sounds, on paper, it's perfecto, just like everything we have written down.
Whose resources, Helmut?
That's the question.
Because Zucman is French. I think a whole bunch of the people of this, economists of this thing, are also French. So, that's why I made the statement at the start when I came in.
Mm-hmm.
It still sounds like Africa working for everyone.
Well, that's because Africa doesn't have a plan.
We are the meal.
Mm-hmm.
We are the meal. Oh, my goodness.
We are the fish on the chopping.
We're not the fish, bro. We are the full course meal. We are everything. We are the potatoes. We are the bread. We are the pasta. We are the rice. We are the meat. We are the fish. We are the pork. We are the lamb. We're the game because we've got game. We're everything. We are the full course meal. So we still work for someone.
Yeah.
So yeah. It is an epiphany realizing this and going to this room. Because, I mean, these guys try to present the humanity in the discussion, but I don't see the Global South perspective.
Yeah. Oh, no, just listen. On their website, not the report. The website where you find the report.
Yeah.
It's just the second paragraph under introduction. The second paragraph under introduction, this is how it reads. Over the course of the 20th century, several countries were able to reduce social inequality significantly via the development of social democratic welfare states, public education, health, progress, taxation of income and wealth, social security systems, labor law, and democratic rights, while at the same time achieving unprecedented levels of economic prosperity. They were looting. Throughout the 20th century.
Who are the countries that he mentions? Just so we know.
This historical trend towards equality, social inclusive, and prosperity, however, has been interrupted and in some cases, partly reversed since the 1980s and 1990s. Moreover, this long-run evolution has been largely confined to the subset of rich nation states in the north. Yeah, that is why.
Yeah.
So when you say over the course of the 20th century, over the course of the 20th century, several countries were able to reduce social inequality significantly via the development of social democratic welfare states and public education. A lot of developing countries, especially those ones in Africa, will look at you and go like, what 20th century are you talking about? For the first half of the 20th century, we were fighting for our independence. From you, by the way.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of other people that were also from, who probably have parents that were immigrants from other parts of the global south that are authors of that report.
Yeah, exactly. And now here to answer your question somewhat, well, slightly. Moreover, this long-run evolution has been largely confined to a subset of rich nation states in the north, particularly in Western and Nordic Europe, while largely overlooking enormous north-south inequalities. This is even more problematic given that the Western enrichment could never have taken place without a very strong international integration and without the brutal exploitation of natural and human resources available on the global scale, resulting in massive human suffering and unprecedented environmental damage.
I just got a light bulb moment right now. So technically what they're calling for is bringing back the interconnectedness of the continents of what we saw back in colonialism. The interconnectedness, ne?
Yeah.
Into a modern day scenario.
Yeah, to
achieve the 2100 goal.
Yeah, minus the colonialism part, because they are already pointing out, they basically point out the level of development in terms of economic development that has been achieved by mostly, Western Europe and North America.
Mm.
Would not have been possible if it were not for basically flat-out exploitation that took place throughout the entire colonial period.
Yeah, yeah. Of the global south, basically.
So the only country that can talk about that, the only country that can say, you know what, you can just develop without having to exploit someone. I'll listen to that coming from China. Anyone else will have a very long discussion, a very long one.
No, they will first have to please explain. Please explain.
Yeah, now.
I think that's what Germany is currently doing with Namibia.
You mean he's busy going ekray. But now anyway.
Yeah, we're back. At least it's now what 5:20. I would know. It's a good time period. Yes.
I have to practice, man, and it's really hard.
But yeah. You are right. Yeah, you are right.
Yeah, and then it goes on to point out that where is that Western Europe, as well as the successful development, expenses in all parts of the world, a more ambitious social, internationalist and planet conscious agenda is now needed in order to pursue the movement towards equality at a global level, to confront the existential challenges of global warming and planetary habitability. Now, global warming and planetary habitability are a result of unregulated large-scale capital exploitation.
From where?
The very same guys that are giving us the report. Look, the problem with this is... must be a snow syndrome. Look, some of us...
Since we're the only continent that doesn't really know about snow.
No, we don't. Look, on paper, it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Except applying this practically, we are just going to end up... let's just look at something that we have written down that a lot of, again, developed countries have a problem following through. International law.
True. But who also developed international law?
It's perfect on paper. But in reality, the members of the UN Security Council are the ones that are running around the world, breaking down the laws that the institution they have literally built is set to maintain. Mm. Is set to maintain what? It's in the name. UN Security Council.
Yeah.
Their role, according to the UN Charter, is to make sure there's international peace and security. That's on paper. In reality, they are the major cause of international peace and insecurity. Basically, international insecurity. That's the exact same thing. You know what? By 2100, we will learn how to share. No, we won't. Look. The lady that was communicating with the whistle, with the whistleblower, gave her the documents from the Panama Papers. I think they were about 1 point something to 2 point something terabyte.
Mm.
That's how large the documents were, and those documents was centered around a company whose sole job was to create shell companies. Companies that only exist basically on paper to create, offshore companies, not shell companies, offshore companies for politicians, business individuals, and presidents. Now, that lady was based in Malta, and she was very brave journalist, by the way, because she was already reporting on corruption in her own jurisdiction at the time.
Mm.
So that's how she popped up on the radar of the whistleblower that was just looking at all this massive global level Tura boy that were looting
I think Tura boys
the world over.
Tura boys was come and tell you, Helmut, please don't put us in that same category.
Yeah, and actually I apologize to all the Tura boys. Tura boys just grab cell phones. These guys are grabbing entire economies, and that law firm, they catered to clients the world over. And now in the Panama Papers, it's the Western world, Central world, Southern, Global South, Global North. That's when you know that world leaders and their cojones business, multinational business individuals, they just figure out on a daily basis.
Mm.
There are institutions out there whose sole job is to create these offshore companies, so that for anyone with enough money that they want hidden somewhere. That's all they do. And that's what they did for decades until the whole thing went bust in 2016. And in 2017, the lady that was basically publishing all these things based in Malta died in a car bomb explosion.
Yeah.
And that story sounds similar to the Tembisa Hospital in South Africa. The lady that flagged over 200 offshore companies that was used by South Africans, by the way, to steal taxpayers' money from South Africa so they can buy fancy cars. The lady that flagged those transactions and blocked them was gunned down. Now, on a planet with people that are dedicated to the upholding of the principle of stingy men's association like that, good luck having a fair distribution of resources. Now, you haven't. Look at it this way. Every time that I read about a story of assassination, one thing that I understand is that people have killed for way less. People have killed for way less. Billions. Oh, you're gone. Now, the funny thing, the interesting thing about the assassination of the lady, and I keep saying the lady. I have her name somewhere. May have closed that tab. Now, the thing is, the Maltese police investigated the the death of the woman, because there were massive protests all over Malta.
Yeah.
They investigated the death of the woman. After that investigation, the pressure in the political sphere built up so much, their prime minister had to resign. And the police they arrested three men in connection to planting the bomb and detonation and obviously the assassination of the
woman. Oh, it's her son that actually also drove the campaigning. The lady's
The whole protest. Yeah, they basically
the lady's son,
literally wrote a book out of it.
Because the police actually didn't want to act.
They didn't.
There was political interfering in the police investigation.
A whole lot of it.
Yeah. So, because Basically, his mother was a single parent. So the guy was unhappy that his mom was literally bombed because she was an investigative journalist of Malta.
Which is
a little bit ugly, bruh.
Oh, my favorite part is the three guys that were arrested, for planting the bomb and the detonation and all that. Two of them were sentenced to 40 years. One was sentenced to 15 years.
Mm.
The guy that ordered the hit, a major businessman in Malta, he's out on bail.
Of course.
You know, there's something about opening a Chafo Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Chafo Lager and start the conversation. Chafo Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
The wait is over. The deals are here. It's Big Red Weekend for 3 days only. ShopRite brings you massive savings of up to 50% off. Like a 750 grams Ellis Brown Coffee Creamer, only 64 Namibian dollars. 5 kg Marathon White Sugar, just 96 Namibian dollars. 2 liter Coca-Cola Soft Drink, just 20 Namibian dollars each. Pampers disposable nappies or pants. All variants, only 179 Namibian dollars per pack. Don't miss out. This weekend only, get up to 50% off. Valid until 21 June 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Now, where was I? So, next time someone gives you money to go on assassinate someone, you have to understand: can you afford a lawyer? Because the three men
don't splurge that money.
Yeah, the three men that thought they got a job, they got a gig to go and plant a bomb. I mean, the job, at least, unfortunately for the woman and fortunately for them, the job was successful. Except when the investigation came, the three. The three are now in jail. The man that ordered the hit because of his power and access money, he's out on bail awaiting trial from outside. Yeah.
He's probably flying.
When the police arrested him, he was on his yacht. When they arrest you, you are somewhere in a Kambashi. Look, some of this, I know they are...
You're still trying to order pizza. You're trying to order pizza.
And if that money is in your bank account, you can't even access it.
It'll be used as evidence against you. Where did you get this money? We can see here it was 0.0 cents. Where did you get this amount of money from?
Look, it's the same thing that I saw in the case. It's the same thing that I learned from News 24 through News 24 with the guys that assassinated Ababeta Diokran, the Temisa Hospital is a financial executive lady.
Yeah.
The subs investigated that case, and some of them were arrested at their village.
The subs guys.
The guys that were involved in the assassination.
Oh.
Yeah, but the guys that ordered the hit, to this day, no one wants to talk, but no one even know who ordered the hit. So, in other words, the guys that gave the money to go and shoot that poor woman is probably chilling in his air-conditioned room right now. Mm. And they're behind bars.
Driving a luxury car.
Luxury
house.
Exactly. Now, at this point, you become a liability. They can even start ordering hits within that prison to...
Obviously silence people.
Yeah, to silence you. Not to mention you live in an environment where you can't pick soap. I mean, that's a terrible idea.
Drop soap.
Yeah. You know what? I'll just grind the traditional way. Nope.
Let's not go there, Almut. I just started laughing because I read a meme just yesterday about such a joke about dropping the soap. But yeah, getting back on track.
Yeah, so back to the report.
Yeah.
So the report itself is a brilliant masterpiece, but I'm with Richard Murphy. It takes out the reality. The report is like it's written for an ideal world. And we live in a real one.
Mm.
Unfortunately. It's a brilliant piece of work, but Oof. By 2100.
I mean, if we even consider, Helmut, some of the particular things that are put forward here, because I also just want to factor in a small sort of like summary that he highlights here.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds attractive to you and me, this particular report.
It does sound attractive.
It sounds ambitious. Murphy also highlights it here because he's got a little description under his videos. And he says it sounds hopeful. But, he continues on to say, but there's a major problem. The proposal assumes away the practical, political, legal, and administrative obstacles that make its plan unworkable. So, we've already highlighted one thing that's problematic, a suggestion from the report.
Mm-hmm.
Ne? Let's go and look at the political situation in countries.
Yeah.
So, the political situation around the world is primarily that, and it's a label that's not often used, but political economy is a very strong force today.
Mm-hmm.
Political economy is also technically what you see playing out in block plus block equals unblock, because instead of assuming that market dynamics and an economy with its markets within it would solve and balance and, you know, work for itself, with by technically ignoring that laws are made from politicians or the political classes who wish to bring in regulations to regulate activities in markets. And these particular laws, like the template I described a little bit earlier in our show today, right now, the one about the gambling, the Gaming and Entertainment Act of Namibia, which basically just speaks about licensing and compliance. It doesn't speak anything to customer or consumer safety or any mitigation strategy or the establishment of any authority that deals with ensuring, like the guys from South Africa said, from the South African Responsible Gambling Foundation of South Africa, they literally said, why this is sometimes why I like other countries in terms of how they look at issues. Those two guys presented a scenario to say why responsible gambling is a benefit to you, the gambling operator.
Yeah.
Ne? They literally said, look after your customer so that your customer comes back every time. So if you put a system or, you know, measures close at hand to your customer that can help your customer with an issue, if it becomes an issue, you can literally do the same, you know, in terms of seeing longevity to your particular customer being enjoyed. It's a good ethos. It's a wonderful ethos. Where we've heard of this before with the circular economy as well. But when you come to this discussion of this report specifically, this report once again ignores certain realities. Now there's something else also, for example. Come to Namibia, where the inequality discussion in Namibia is based upon, now I, who does not have a cent to my name, must compete in the same economy with someone whose family has accumulated hundreds of thousands to close to millions of Namibian dollars over 100 years. How do you compete against someone like that for resources in the Namibian economy?
You can't.
You cannot. You cannot, Helmut. You literally cannot. In any reality, whether it be a parallel reality, this current reality, the multiverse from the Marvel movies or whatever, you cannot fathom where a situation of you did not have, but this guy did have, this guy has access to so much because of wealth creation over generations, and you now have to figure out what wealth creation is today, after independence, you have to figure this out. No one else will do it for you. The government will do it for you. Your local political leader or councillor, whatever, in your community does not talk about wealth creation. How do I know? Because that's not what they talk about. They talk about we need to develop and develop and develop. Uh-huh. There's no things of what you need to do is we will invest in systems or in infrastructure that creates markets for you. That's not what your local councillors are saying. So Namibia has got a massive uphill firstly to first meet. A third dimension, Helmut, that also takes place here is, for example, the kinds of discussions that Namibia wants to focus on. Meaning, we go and say that everyone must benefit from the future oil or the resources or the president's tagline that she showed up with last year at her inauguration and at her first State of the Nation and at, what was the other one, the budget speech as well, where she kept saying we are too few to be poor.
Yeah.
But you can only literally answer that question if you literally say you use the sovereign wealth fund that the Bank of Namibia sits with and you literally say from next month or next year, every Namibian from a certain age to a certain age
without a criminal record.
You are putting requirements and conditions on things.
Make it enticing.
But what do you think happens to that Namibian that comes out of jail and they cannot find a job because of they've got a criminal record?
No, if you come out of jail, you are good. You are being incorporated back into society. Isn't that what correctional service means?
But you are now you just mentioned to discriminate against them because they've got the criminal record.
Without a criminal record. Okay, well then,
they need also to be incorporated back into society.
So
right? You are right.
So without a criminal record means
discrimination.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So whether or not they've got that, look, we can adopt something from that Alaska fund.
Yeah, you're right. If you just go in, if you get arrested once, then it's over for you forever.
Yeah.
No, man, that's not what I mean.
Because they can't find jobs if they have criminal records in Namibia. Even our colleague Penny has interviewed many former inmates.
Yeah.
And they say it's difficult.
It's difficult.
It's literally difficult. So firstly, firstly, the discussion from this report has to be, Namibia must use what it can from it to try and achieve certain goals. That's now obviously if the ministers listen to, not the ministers, we realize it's actually the technocrats in the ministries. So that's if these people in the ministries technically take this knowledge and they go like, listen, we need to change certain things, rearrange it for us and meet our goals. But now the interconnectedness is another issue. Between countries, between continents. Because you still end up with the same scenario that I stated at the start of our discussion, Helmut. I still see Africa working for someone else.
Africa is
meeting someone else's goals.
Africa is meeting someone else's goals.
There was one lovely thing that someone that I know said, Helmut. Africa will always pay back on its investments. You can sit wherever you are. If whoever invests in Africa, they will still recuperate their return on investment every time. Do you know how bad that makes us sound, Helmut? That means we literally are the extraction for whoever in the world.
Yeah, because the person that's supposed to be making the laws to regulate that over extraction has a business interest in the extraction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's one thing I like about, being a sarcastic person.
Yeah.
Because the news coming out of the political world is full of sarcasm. Now, the world we live in, the world, this template of economic and political power sharing, that's a very funny one. That's basically summed up in this report. Let's just all come together in what I always like to call one giant ecumenical hug. The problem.
You always find a way to make the most mundane words sound just completely comical.
It's a genetic thing. Now.
yeah, we're still saying.
Yeah. In the late 1990s, you're talking 98, 99 to the early 2000s, Philip Morris, the cigarette company, wanted to access the market in Czech Republic.
Of secret company.
Yeah. You see, they wanted to access the market in Czech Republic. The thing is, they had very strict health laws. Now, he hired a company to actually do, they hired a consulting firm, to help them do a research to see, like, to weigh the pros and cons of relaxing the cigarette access laws in the country.
Mm.
Yeah. That was basically made mandatory by their Ministry of Health.
Yeah.
Yeah. They told them, look, if you want to access our market with your product, you'll have to convince us that we are not going to end that our Ministry of Health is not going to end up with a health chaos that will also just put a burden on our health infrastructure.
Mm.
Yeah. They did the consultation, all right? Then they published a report. That report was in the secret sphere of the, I think, Philip Morris representatives and the minister, and the prime minister at the time.
Mm.
But, well, these things have a way of finding themselves in the public sphere. So it was leaked to the media and the whole thing went bananas. Now, what did the consulting firm now find? That, well, look, the thing is, here are the advantages of having your citizens smoke.
Mm.
One, they'll die sooner, so you don't have to worry about pensions.
I'm sorry for laughing, guys. I know it's a morbid story, but yeah, true. It's Helmut sitting in front of me.
Look, man, they had to write a formal apology in 2001.
Mm. For something that happened in there?
Look, man. They even now in that report they even referenced the 90 how much the government has had to spend on had to spend I think it's either in 99 or 2000 and how much it would save if much of these pensioners died before they could reach pension level or pension age. This is how much money you'd save. And that's actually what made people go crazy when this whole thing reached mainstream media. What's my favorite? CBS News. The Guardians. Yeah. Philip Morris, a U.S. tobacco giant behind Marlboro cigarettes, had apologized for funding a widely dreaded survey that found that the early deaths of smokers helped government to save money.
Mm.
Look, that is a private company. And the private company's main goal is to increase shareholder dividends. Cost what it may. And that is just plain crazy. Because if your excuse is, you know what, I can save you some money, I'll just sell you products that will make sure that your people die sooner than expected. So they are not a burden on your whole pensioner, and I'll save you some money. All I just need is access to your market. That's nuts. For some reason,
I've got the products.
I have the product.
I know how to get there.
I know how to get there.
Yeah.
All I just need is a green light.
Why does this sound like a Resident Evil movie, Hamus?
It is a Resident Evil movie.
Man. No, it's actually a Resident Evil video game because it was a video game first.
Yeah. Now, they had to apologize after the whole thing came out. They had to apologize. I think that was in 2001 to the, to the Czech Republic. Speaking of Czech Republic, according to the African response to South Africa's xenophobia attacks and anti-immigration, today Czech Republic is playing with South Africa. So according to the rest of Africa, we are all from Czech Republic.
It's Czechia. It's no longer Czech Republic.
I know, right? Yeah, it's Czechia. And one guy, I think it's a Nigerian guy who said, okay, now we have to support Czech Republic. I don't know anything about Czech Republic. My question was, I only asked him one question. Do you like beer? And I was like, yes. Then you know enough about Czechia.
Well, they apparently compete for said beer, quality of beer, alongside the other guys?
Yeah, they've been, I don't want to say criticized, because that would be a negative statement. Because it's not a criticism. It's more like a congratulation for having some beer brands that are cheaper than water. So that would be nice.
That is actually funny, hey?
Yeah.
When you look at it.
Mm.
In some cases, how easily accessible it is to buy beer than rather having a bottle of water.
Yeah, they're known for that. And it's them and the Germans. They're known for beer. Norway is known for something else, but...
Well, then there's also the breaking fluid consuming guys, the Russians on the other side.
Oh, it wasn't...
I still cannot get out of that story where the guys, they literally emptied out all the vodka in the one bar. It's a bunch of lumberjacks during winter. And then someone comes up with an idea. Yeah, you know what? There's breaking fluid. Who told you that an acidic thing is worth drinking? A thing that has acid in it.
Wasn't it until 2015 when they considered anything under, when they legally considered, I think it's anything under, anything under 5% or 15%, one of the two. Mm. Yeah. That's when it was considered beer. Before that, it was just a soft drink. Welcome to Mother Russia. Culture shock would be a real thing if I was dead before 2015.
Nah, dude. You still want to see the end of the night. You don't want to be the night. No.
Yeah, at least not in that. That's not the, the global north.
Mm.
Especially the countries with insane winters where they have, where they have snow. You cannot afford to pass out.
Yeah.
For the night. You can't. You're going to die. You literally freeze to death.
Yeah. Well, I saw it. I felt it. I've seen snow. I don't like it. Just so that you guys know, I don't like it. Look, man, I'm unfortunately the worst kind of a Namibian that you want to take to the northern hemisphere.
Yeah.
I don't want to see snow. I don't want to be in a country. Well, I'd like to see it in summer, not in its cold months. But anyway, so there's an important thing that stems also from this, Helmut, that Murphy also once again, cites. Which is his counter-argument to this report. Now, he highlights here something also known as taxing wealth, which also features in the report.
Yeah.
Now, there's a very good point that he makes, because Murphy is also, besides being an economics, an accounting professor, because he also studied accounting, he also has economics that he also studied and mastered, where he highlights primarily that many people sit with assets, and it's difficult to tax assets. Because let's, for example, say, Helmut, you are someone, your parents left you 5 farms.
Yeah.
But four of the 5 are in a trust.
Ooh.
And the one farm that the government can tax you on is the one that you are paying taxes on already. But the other 4 are in... Basically, because the other 4 probably are different business entities, because that's also what a lot of people do in Namibia. They register farms on as business entities, because technically a farm technically is a commercial farm. It's technically a business.
Hence commercial.
So, because you sell the products that you produce into the market or into the economy. So, it doesn't mean that you've got cash on hand to the value of the 5 farms.
Yeah.
For you to be taxed adequately.
Yeah.
You have to sometimes make the stuff, or the money is technically the value of the item.
Yeah.
Now, in many scenarios, he argues that this is difficult in many cases. For example, like in the UK, where very few people own a lot of assets.
Yeah. So it's few people that own a lot of assets.
Or they've bought into other assets that then started influencing some or other inequality discussion in the UK. Oh, for example, what they discovered was in the UK and in the US, after COVID, more people needed homes. And then they realized that there were these venture capital companies starting to buy property management companies.
Yeah.
And these property management companies owned flats, complexes, malls, and stuff.
Isn't that just a smart way of keeping the price up?
True, but it's also what they realized was that after COVID, a lot of people needed homes.
Yeah.
And they because what happened in the US and in the UK and in Europe is that it, okay, not in Europe specifically, but UK and US, is that it looked like these guys sat with a whole bunch of money in this financial markets.
Yeah.
They needed to invest the money. So they started looking for the frontiers they never invested in. The frontiers they never considered.
The property market was
then they started going into the residential property markets. And now in the US, for example, the issue is of such a nature that they realize that they are like the Black Rocks are literally in home ownership.
Yeah.
They're literally in the home ownership categories of the economy. So they would own whole suburbs through the loans that they dispensed,
mm-hmm.
That they gave to a bank, and then the bank financed home ownership initiatives in a town. But the assets actually belong to the asset manager. So, you see scenarios like that. Where did the money come from? Obviously from the central banks of those countries. Namibia Central Bank cannot play the same games.
No.
It doesn't have the same clout. It doesn't have the same strength. Thus, with us, it's a nuanced discussion. Thus, with us, if you look at this report, you will immediately say, but this still means Namibia still has to be dependent upon someone in the equation. This equation can be five people or five entities or five countries, but still Namibia being the African in the equation would still have to work for the discussion. The other people are just earning money out of the discussion. Bare bones, very, very sad to realize, but we've already...
It's a sad realization.
We've basically, how do I call it? Sensitized ourselves to such a level, we automatically know the position that we always are at a negative as an African. The moment you step into a discussion, you're always at a negative.
Yeah, I think it's just us being. It's it's not us. I look at it not us basically looking at ourselves. It's us coming to acknowledging that harsh reality of how the world works and we fit in.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to help us know that we have to figure out what we're going to do to get where we want to be because it's not going to be based on equal global resource distribution because even though that works, that sounds amazing on paper, people just don't work that way.
No, they don't.
Nope.
But before that, we're going to take a live read, guys, and we come back right after this. The Avicii University's NQA approval for expansion of scope. The Vavitcha University is pleased to inform all stakeholders that the Namibia Qualifications Authority NQA Council has approved our application for expansion of scope. This approval grants accreditation for the following NQF registered qualifications offered through full-time blended learning mode at our university. The Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, the Bachelor of Social Work Honours and the Diploma in Legal Studies, Level 6. Vavitcha University, where everyone is an achiever. So, yeah. It sounds good.
You know, one of my favorite things that I like to observe about people, especially those that like fighting, is...
Those that like fighting?
Yeah.
There are people that like fighting.
Yeah, after one or two beers. Now, look, the thing is...
What people do you know? What people do you
know? You do not want to know.
Do you know I run away from such things?
Look, the same here. Look, one thing that I have acknowledged from a very early age is that I like talking.
Yeah.
And now that I have learned to make money through talking... I value my teeth even more because that's how you pronounce words like South Africa, sweetheart.
You don't want to be South.
South Africa and sweetheart is not very romantic. But
why did you have to make that joke, Albert? Because I can see the person's half.
South Africa.
I'm sorry, it also applies to the guys with the gap in their teeth. I'm sorry.
The wheat hat. You need yeah, I mean, you need a certain level of amount of money in your bank account to pull off that.
The sweet hat.
To pull off sweet hat. If you are broke, it's not going to work.
Okay, let me stop. Let me stop.
Now, where was on my example? Look, if you listen to the language of of people, of what people say when they're going to get when they're about to get in a fight, I'm going to beat him. The question I more often ask is, are you going to find him tied to a pole?
And then
you just do the beating.
Yeah. Do you think this will be one-sided?
No.
Yeah. Definitely not.
ShopRite's biggest toy promotion is all set to blast off. Get ready to play more and pay less with our wide range of toys. Get unbeatable deals like 24-centimeter Cuddly Baby Bukeka or Britney doll for just $59.99 each. And a 36-centimeter Zeus dump truck, red or yellow, for only $129.99 each. Hurry and save big. Now until 21 June 2026. ShopRite. Lower prices you can trust. Always.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of what would be business and economic segment, but it's Thursday, so you know what that is. It's a business with Roy Red, before HD kills me. Now, the global what report is that again?
Global Justice.
Justice report. It makes a lot of sense on paper, but it ignores just the center of human behavior, and that's greed.
Yes.
Yeah. And
basically,
which makes the whole thing sound on paper very perfecto, but when you think about its application in the real world, then you just ask, you lose hope in the whole thing. And we can see this with the application of international law, which is which is applied based on your economic status and your power in terms of influence economical and political and global stage. And again, there is, look, after I just read 2-3 paragraphs in this report, the first thing that came in my head was the Canadian Prime Minister's Mark Carney's speech at the World Economic Forum, especially the part where he said, we knew for 4 decades, we knew that international law was not as international in its application as it said on paper, but we played along because we were benefiting from it.
Basically.
So, until tomorrow, same time, same place, on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM from me, you all have a good one.
And on that note, guys, stay tuned for the rest of the programming.